Welcome to Crossroads. The Chinese Communist Party is claiming it's made new breakthroughs in fusion energy. Now, these reactors, they're envisioned as the kind of next generation of nuclear technology. But at the same time, the new developments, they may not actually be what they seem. Popular Mechanics says this. It said China joined the quest for an enormous internationally cooperative nuclear fusion reactor in 2023. And it says that now they've reached a milestone by generating its magnetic field for the first time, a field that is entirely new in its design. Now, notes that this so-called artificial sun reactor, which is what they typically call, of course, fusion energy, this is the Huanliu 3, HL3, is a tokamak run by 17 collaborating labs and facilities around the world. But the much ballyhooed quest to make energy using these huge reactors still has a decade or more to go, with a lot of misinformation in the mix. Now, note that while the HL3 puts China in the group of forerunners in nuclear fusion research, this is not nuclear fission, which, of course, current nuclear technology is based on. And note this reactor is not the largest by far, and this milestone is only for its own timeline. And note this reactor is not close to operating consistently or producing energy that compares to the vast amounts of energy that it and other similar reactors, known as tokamaks, are required to operate. So what does it mean? It says for a world-class artificial sun reactor like this to establish its own novel magnetic field design, it says that, well, it's a big milestone within the field of tokamak research, as the magnetic field is what actually contains the superheated fusion-generating plasma. Because plasma reaches 1,000,000 degrees, it cannot make contact with any other material, or it will both instantly cool down out of energy range and also damage or destroy whatever part it touches. Now, notes that as such, a successful magnetic field is the only thing, that they claim at least, that will ever allow a tokamak to contain the plasma and keep it hot enough to make net energy. Now, briefly on this, I've actually done a lot of research into fusion energy in the past. I've spoken with people who work on it. The problem you have with fusion energy, typically, is that they can't contain it. What it does, essentially, is it creates a kind of, you know, they call them stars in a jar, an artificial sun, so to speak. It gets bright, it glows, and then it destroys the container. And the problem you have with this is that every time it destroys the container, well, you lose your investment. You have to rebuild whatever parts were destroyed. And so not only is it kind of experimental and theoretical if it can even possibly work, but also extremely expensive because, again, every time you turn it on, it destroys something. Now, on this, the big issue they have is they cannot contain it. So the theory here is that if they can make a magnetic field that can contain it, and then hypothetically it doesn't touch any kind of actual component, then they can hypothetically harness that through the magnetic field somehow. The problem they have with the current magnetic field technology that they can actually generate to an extent now is that there's like dips in it. It's not an even magnetic field. And it, of course, as soon as you turn it on, it starts causing disruptions within that. And so it's a very expensive, very theoretical type of energy. Now, with that said, even though it's experimental and kind of theoretical at the time, if a country were to actually successfully develop fusion energy and actually make it work, this would give them a large strategic edge on global energy control. And this is kind of starting a new race to develop it. One of the reasons why you see China on this, one of the reasons you see actually the United States on it, is because whoever gets it first is going to dominate the global energy market. And whoever doesn't do it, they're going to fall behind. This is deemed as one of the kind of core technologies of the future. And whoever gets it first is going to own it. Now, the diplomat says that in April 2024, China released the draft of its amended atomic energy law nearly 7 years after initial discussions began. It says the law will serve as the guiding document for the regulation of nuclear power, including research and development of the nascent nuclear fusion industry. And it's in the past year, the Chinese government included nuclear fusion development in its annual government work reports for the first time. And it says, well, that Zhang Jianhua, head of the Chinese Energy Administration, also called for establishing a, quote, forward-looking strategy for China's nuclear fusion industry. And notes as well, though, that China is not alone in its growing interest in nuclear fusion. At the 2023 United Nations Climate Change Conference, COP28, former U.S. climate envoy John Kerry unveiled a new international partnership initiative on nuclear fusion involving 35 country partners. Although specific details about the partnership have yet to be disclosed, we don't actually know the details on it. It says this groundbreaking initiative represents the first time that nuclear fusion, once considered in the realm of science fiction, has been presented as a viable climate solution at the UN Climate Change Conference. It notes as well that a flurry of nuclear fusion legislation has mushroomed globally in the past few years, and within the United States, the Department of Energy set out a 10-year plan in 2022, which includes an initiative that coordinates all fusion-related work under a single program to streamline fusion research, development, and demonstration activities. Now, as well, that data from the International Atomic Energy Agency indicates that there are 96 nuclear fusion pilot projects worldwide, with an additional 11 under construction and 29 planned. And notes as well that most of them emerged just in the last 2 years. And so, in other words, internationally, at government levels, nuclear fusion is being pushed as kind of a global strategic initiative. And you have, of course, the Chinese Communist Party working on one major side of that, and you have the United States working on the other major side of it. A few key points with nuclear fusion. It's regarded as basically completely clean. It's also, even though it's nuclear, it doesn't have radiation, or at least so little that you could technically, and I don't know the current regulations, but even technically develop it in your own house because it's regarded as that safe. And so this kind of represents nuclear energy, but on a safe level, relatively speaking. And currently China is actually outspending the United States in the race to develop this energy. But some of the money, interestingly, is coming from an unlikely source, a company notably tied with a popular Chinese video game. I'll be talking more about this when we come back from a quick break.
Experts agree. One of the best ways to protect against financial uncertainty is to diversify your portfolio. Learn how physical gold and silver can secure your retirement funds from today's economic challenges with a gold IRA from American Hartford Gold. You can safeguard your wealth with no penalties or taxes when you transfer your current qualifying retirement accounts. Call now and our precious metals specialists will send you a free information kit, no cost or obligation. American Hartford Gold, a trusted industry leader with an A-plus from the Better Business Bureau, has a 5-star rating from thousands of happy clients. Whether you are getting physical precious metals in a gold IRA or delivered to your doorstep, we offer only the highest quality gold and silver. For your peace of mind, we also offer a no-fee buyback commitment, a low-price guarantee, along with free shipping and free insurance. So, don't wait. Call the number on your screen today and secure your financial future.
Welcome back. The Chinese Communist Party is claiming it's made breakthroughs in developing fusion energy. Now, the reactors, fusion energy, they're envisioned as the next generation of nuclear technology. And China currently is outspending the United States in this race to develop it. But interestingly, some of the money in China has come from an unlikely source, a company tied in with a popular Chinese video game. Windows Central says a couple of years ago, Daniel Ahmad of Nico Partners reported that miHoYo of Genshin Impact, one of the biggest video games around, had invested $65 million into the Ultimate Clean Energy Project, and now the investment has begun bearing fruit. And it's that Genshin Impact is one of the most popular PC games in the entire world, a free-to-play gacha game. Players can collect dozens of anime-style heroes, earning in-game currency by playing or purchasing for chances to unlock them. And notes that Genshin Impact's popularity stems from its live service, which is frequently updated with large, high-quality story content patches on top of some playable areas, you know, being made in it as well, similar to titles like World of Warcraft and the like. But it says, unlike World of Warcraft, though, Genshin Impact is using some of its profits to fund nuclear fusion technology. And so this Chinese video game, money from it, people in the United States, your kids playing it, they're helping finance, it seems, some of the money, of course, going to these fusion energy projects in China. Now, there's something else really important with this. Fusion energy, it also ties into having a potential economy tied in with the moon. And I know this sounds like science fiction. I mean, look, even fusion energy used to be kind of seen as science fiction. But the Chinese Communist Party is trying to control what they call the cislunar space, the space between the Earth and the moon. And with that, of course, they're looking to build a moon base, especially now that they claim at least that they found evidence of water on the moon. And also because, well, the moon is believed to be abundant with helium-3. That's a material that you would need for fusion reactors. And so if a country, for example, were to actually succeed in developing fusion energy and making it viable and having it work, you would need to have helium-3. And the moon is believed to be one of the major sources of helium-3. If they were to, of course, establish this, it would mean that they would have a functioning Earth-Moon economy, and notably the ability to control that region as well and finance it. The Chinese Communist Party, look, for years, they've been talking about plans to mine the moon. And of course, a lot of this discussion came about even before nuclear fusion was even seen as a viable kind of future energy. But if you were to have a functioning mining operation on the moon, that would, of course, give some reason to have a moon base there and have them actually serve a function other than just research. It would mean that you'd be developing actual mining activities that you could use both for helium-3 and for notably water, if they do in fact find it there in large quantities. And also the capability of having operations even beyond the moon, because of course, if they do find water, well, they can use water for hydrogen energy, or if they, you know, hypothetically do work on fusion energy, they could have, of course, a fusion-based kind of energy program that could do operations even to Mars or beyond. Now, in other news, the Biden administration, they've allegedly revised their strategy on global nuclear threats. Now, Voice of America says that White House officials on Wednesday appear to downplay Beijing's sentiment that it is, quote, seriously concerned after a report alleged the United States recently approved a secret plan to shift some of the focus of its nuclear strategy away from Russia to deal with Beijing, the CCP's nuclear weapons buildup. Now, notes that National Security Council spokesman Sean Sabat told Voice of America in response to emailed questions, quote, "The guidance issued earlier this year is not a response to any single entity, country, nor threat," but added, "We have repeatedly voiced concerns about the advancing nuclear arsenals of Russia, China, and North Korea. The most recent guidance," it says, "builds on what was issued by previous administrations. There's far more continuity than change," he said. But it notes as well, the report said the document, updated every 4 years, reorients U.S. nuclear deterrence strategy to deal with China's massive expansion of its nuclear arsenal. And the new U.S. nuclear strategy, it says, also orders U.S. forces to prepare for the possibility of coordinated nuclear challenges from China, Russia, and North Korea, according to the report. And this is important. Now, it notes that for decades, U.S. nuclear policy has been primarily focused on Russia, right? The old Soviet Union and the nuclear threat, the only other country with comparable nuclear weapons capabilities. But U.S. officials have increasingly warned that China's nuclear buildup under Xi Jinping is proceeding faster than previously expected. In an unclassified document released late last year, it says, the Pentagon estimated that the Chinese military had more than 500 operational warheads in its arsenal and will have more than 1,000 warheads by 2030. Now, this is in the backdrop of the Chinese Communist Party stopping talks on nuclear nonproliferation. They don't want to have talks and discussions with the United States around getting rid of nuclear weapons. Even then, of course, some people would point to the New START Treaty signed under the Obama administration between the U.S. and Russia, where the two countries did agree to start getting rid of their nuclear arsenal. It turned out Russia there were some technicalities and loopholes in that. They can get rid of the old arsenal, but they were building new types of nuclear weapons. And so as the United States has been getting rid of its nuclear arsenal, other countries, including Russia, but especially the Chinese Communist Party, have been rapidly expanding theirs. Not to mention, you know, rising nuclear powers like, of course, North Korea. And this is also in context of the CCP and the whole new axis of powers making increased nuclear threats against other countries. Notably, for example, the Chinese Communist Party and Russia have, over the last couple years, been repeatedly making nuclear threats against Europe, against South Korea, against even Taiwan, against even the United States. And, you know, with all this, the recent incursion of the Chinese Communist Party in Russia sending bombers into the Alaskan air defense zone kind of brought that home for the United States. Now, this was also explained in an August 1st speech at CSIS from Vipin Narang, Acting Assistant Secretary of Defense for Space Policy. Let me show you this. Watch.
The key message I'd like to leave you with today is sobering but necessary. While the administration has long sought to strike a balance between deterrence and arms control, we now find ourselves in nothing short of a new nuclear age, an unprecedented mix of multiple revisionist nuclear challengers who are uninterested in arms control or risk reduction efforts, each rapidly modernizing and expanding their nuclear arsenals, and openly threatening to employ nuclear weapons to achieve their aims.
And he notes something else, that these actions of Russia, but also China especially, are forcing the United States to look for other options on how to, you know, kind of push back. Watch.
First, we must continue to field a modern nuclear deterrent with the numbers and the attributes necessary to deter strategic attack, assure our allies and partners, and meet our objectives if deterrence fails. Our current nuclear force posture and planned modernization program is necessary, but may well be insufficient in the coming years to support this need. Second, we must continue to strengthen our network of allies and partners and our extended deterrence efforts in NATO and the Indo-Pacific, because these are our asymmetric advantage over our adversaries. And third, we must invest in building the next generation of talent, the next generation of leaders to guide our strategic thinking and shape our future infrastructure and capabilities in this era of competition. Let me be clear, competition is not a foregone conclusion. If our adversaries make different choices, so will we. But so far, they have not and show no interest in doing so. So if our adversaries continue down their current paths, the United States, alongside our allies and partners, is ready, willing, and able to confront the challenges of a new nuclear age.
So, in other words, it sounds a bit like the return of a Cold War type situation of nuclear buildup and nuclear threats. It also mentions threats from Russia, North Korea, and the Chinese Communist Party, but noting in particular that in 2021, the Chinese Communist Party was found to be significantly increasing its nuclear weapons programs. Now, this is important because the Chinese Communist Party doesn't necessarily let in, you know, U.S. observers to actually get a real clear view of what they're developing. For them, a lot of this is being done in secret. And notably as well, you know, the United States, a lot of our nuclear arsenal, yes, we have like the doomsday subs and the doomsday planes, which maintain a kind of cloaked nature, right? They maintain a relatively hidden nature. A lot of our other nuclear weapons are in silos that are over-targeted. They know where they are. The Chinese Communist Party, notably, they actually took on some programs the U.S. was going to develop but never did, like the Midget Man program, for example. And the idea is having miniaturized nukes. And, you know, you can move them in and out of underground bases. You can hide them in shipping containers. In fact, the CCP has actually demonstrated things that look like shipping containers, and they lift up in their nuclear launch vehicles. Given that nature, the CCP has taken steps to conceal its nuclear weapons, whereas the United States has mostly maintained its existing arsenal. It is an aging arsenal. We're not really pushing to develop, you know, much with it, and we also haven't really advanced things in terms of making things that can be hidden in the case of a war, which does put us in a pretty serious area of threat when it comes to nuclear weapons. Because remember, Part of the whole nuclear defense treaty and different programs with this is the threat of mutually assured destruction, as terrible as that sounds. But the idea is it's not worth ever using nuclear weapons because the retaliation would destroy you as well. Nobody dares use them because of that. And so if the United States were to lose its side of it, there would be nothing to stop other countries from using them. And that's, of course, the major concern when it comes to, you know, the end of nuclear nonproliferation discussions between the U.S. and China, and also highlights why it's so important the U.S. now is focusing on China and its kind of veiled nuclear programs amidst all of this. Now, in other news, the United States and its allies are also pushing back more strongly against the CCP as the CCP puts its weight behind Russia and other brewing global conflicts. And also, amidst this, it seems the Chinese Communist Party is doubling down instead of backing off, especially as it relates to Russia. Now, it notes the recent top-level meetings, of course, between the Chinese Communist Party and Russia. CNN reported just before that the Chinese Premier Li Qiang was set to meet with Russian leaders in Moscow during a four-day trip to Russia and its ally, notably Belarus, as Beijing shrugs off Western criticism of its robust Kremlin ties amid the war in Ukraine. Now, this is important because, you know, of course, the Chinese Communist Party is facing new sanctions over its business ties with Russia. The Chinese Communist Party has been propping up the war in Ukraine. And of course, NATO has now recognized the Chinese Communist Party as the key enabler of that war. Now, amid sanctions and tariffs and other things trying to stop the CCP from being capable of enabling that war, the big question was, well, will the CCP back off from that or will they double down? And it seems right now that they're doubling down. They're going deeper into it rather than away from it. And this is important as well because it suggests the trend of the free world breaking from the CCP and its whole growing axis with, again, Russia, Iran, North Korea, this is very likely going to accelerate. The dividing of the world in two separate major directions, right? The new axis led by the Chinese Communist Party and the kind of new alliance led by the United States. This is dividing not even on the defense front, not even just on that, but also on the business front. Now, something else is happening important in China, which is the lying flat movement. We talked about this as kind of a growing rebellion against the Chinese Communist Party. Now, it represents a kind of, you know, social rebellion, not a surface-level physical rebellion, but something that's a lot harder for the CCP to quell because it's taking place from just people basically giving up. Well, there's now another layer to this growing problem for the Chinese Communist Party, and they refer to it in China as the rotten tail kids. Reuters said that rising unemployment in China is pushing millions of college graduates into a tough bargain, with some forced to accept low-paying work or even subsist on their parents' pensions, a plight that has created a new working class of, quote, rotten tail kids. They just live off their parents. It says the phrase has become a social media buzzword this year, drawing parallels to the catchword rotten tail buildings for the tens of millions of unfinished homes that have plagued China's economy since 2021. The idea is they're half-built, right? Half-built buildings, half-built adults. And it's that a record number of college graduates this year are hunting for jobs in a labor market depressed by COVID-19, still, again, of course, weighing on the economy there, disruptions as well as regulatory crackdowns on the country's finance, tech, and education sectors. And it's the jobless rate for the roughly 100 million Chinese youth aged 16 to 24 crept above 20% for the first time in April last year. And remember, that's like Chinese Communist Party numbers, and so they might be higher than that. We don't know. It notes that when it hit an all-time high of 21.3% in June 2023, officials in China abruptly suspended the data series to reassess how numbers were compiled. So as soon as they started showing a negative trend in China, the CCP shut down the numbers. They won't even tell you what it is now. And it's that 1 year on, youth unemployment remains a headache with the reconfigured jobless rate, at least on what we know on the surface, spiking to a 2024 high of 17.1% in July as 11.79 million college students graduated this summer and an economy still weighed down by its real estate crisis and other crises as well, the bank crisis and others. Now, interestingly, it says that some of these kids who can't get jobs, right, these jobless young people, they're returning to their hometowns to be, quote, full-time children, relying on their parents' retirement pensions and savings. Now, look, unemployment is not looking so good in the United States either. It turned out that the U.S. was actually inflating some of the unemployment numbers to make it look like it wasn't as bad as it was. And because of this, as soon as the real numbers came out, well, what happened? The stock market took a big hit. Now, in China, that hit has not really taken place because, of course, people aren't really watching for that there. The CCP restricts the numbers, and we don't really know how bad the problem actually is. But in China, the problem of unemployment is tied to other issues as well. One of the big ones being lack of opportunity, the prospect of being a borderline slave. Again, the 996 culture, you're working like 80 hours a week sometimes. And the reality, notably, of just not really having anything to work towards, this dimming future. They call it garbage time in China. The idea that they're just watching things fail and there's nothing they can do about it other than watch it fail. People don't feel motivated to try to save the failing system. And of course, as the CCP sees them losing motivation, it's trying to whip them back and get them in shape, but they don't want to. They're not responding to that. And in fact, the very actions the CCP is making are causing the problem to accelerate rather than decelerate. In fact, they even call Xi Jinping the great accelerator because they believe he's accelerating the downfall of the Chinese Communist Party. Now look, add to this the new way out. Imagine you're a Chinese youth, you don't see a hope in the future, you don't want to work this 996 schedule, you don't want to be driven to, you know, working yourself to death, essentially, especially not even for a lot of pay. And so instead of engaging in that lifestyle that they find just really reprehensible, they're choosing instead to not get involved at all. And that's the lying flat movement. And so this Rotten Tail Kids movement and this lying flat movement, they're kind of merging into an expanding crisis for the Chinese Communist Party. Whether, again, they're doing it intentionally, which is the lying flat movement, or just because there's an actual lack of opportunity, which is, again, the Rotten Tail Kids movement. These two things mean for the Chinese Communist Party, as they have an aging workforce, the people they need to fill that are not doing it. And instead, they're actually living off the top-level part that depends on the workforce. Again, pensions and retirements and everything else. They're taking it from the top without having anything to support it from the bottom. And for the Chinese Communist Party, again, this represents a type of kind of social uprising that they really can't quell using any kind of conventional means. Well, everyone, that's all for today. Thank you so much for joining us. Let me know what you think in the comments. And also, please help us get the word out, share this episode. And as always, please take care of yourselves, stay informed, and stay free. Thank you.